You're listening to another great podcast in the MyMac Podcasting Network.
Geeks Pub. I'm Tim Robertson. He's David Cohen, and we're having Apple Share Notes problems.
God, it's so bad.
It's so bad.
You know, you remember people used to say about Apple stuff, well, it just works.
Yeah.
It doesn't work
anymore.
We've
never said that about their online services. No one has ever said that.
Yeah, a lot of their other stuff doesn't work like that anymore either. But yeah, the online services, just they're fine when they work, but when they don't work, the problem is there's no levers you can pull to try and fix them. They just don't work.
Apple's big event. Look at this brand new iPad. Guy in the back of the room. Can you just make notes work, asshole?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, just, that's awesome. Can you just make the notes work?
That's I really it. I really get the impression that software is maybe in the iOS and macOS teams where they're coming up with new features. They're really, really busy. But there's nobody doing software maintenance at all.
No, nobody is. When's the last time you got an update and you're like, oh, look what Notes can do now? Never.
Well, even if they, again, I don't mind. Sometimes they do add new features, but I don't want them to add new features. I don't want to fix the existing features. So they're ultra reliable.
Well, they update the OS, but they don't update the software running underneath the OS that we use. So great. The new software is great. It'll work. All the new little apps that you gave us and widgets will work for, you know, the next two updates, and then it's dead.
Yeah. And, you know, yeah, we should talk on the other show about the iPad hardware and
we will.
The fact that it's still running the same software underneath. But yeah.
A different story. Yeah, so let's talk about the geeky stuff. We've got our, I guess this is whatever episode for season two of The Bracket. Let me pull up, because I kind of want to be accurate, and I'll be honest with you. I don't remember. I was prepared last week, and then I forgot that you, well, I didn't forget, you just couldn't do the show. There's a difference. So I was all prepared last week.
It was the week before you forgot that I was still on vacation.
Yeah, that was the one that you were on vacation. This one I was like, oh, crap. Yeah. So this would be season two, episode four. And we're down to, well, four, surprisingly enough. And it's not going to be, well, I don't want to say it's not going to be easy, but I already know who's, from our previous conversation, I already know who's going to go to the championship round. But we still need to get there. But we've got some other things to talk about, including me finally getting caught up on a movie I've been wanting to watch since it came out, and I just did it, and that's Godzilla Minus One. We've had the Monster Universe stuff with King Kong and Godzilla, and it's been okay. None of it's been terrible. In fact, I quite enjoyed the first King Kong movie. I thought that was really good.
Yeah, well, I think it's been a bit uneven. The second Godzilla movie, King of the Monsters, was actually pretty awful.
Mm-hmm.
Even though that was the one you'd think would be great because it had Mothra and it had King Ghidorah. And, you know, it was all the traditional Japanese.
I don't even Godzilla remember monsters, it. I don't remember it.
That's how bad it was.
Was that the one that he comes to San Francisco?
No, that was the first one. This was the one that came after that.
Well,
yeah.
I must have watched it, but I don't remember anything about it.
Exactly.
The one he's all like, let them fight? It's like, really?
Yeah.
The dumbest line.
That's right, yeah. The first one I thought was pretty good, actually. It's interesting that Apple show they did, what's it called?
Monarch.
Monarch. Well, yeah. Which I really enjoyed, actually.
I thought it was fantastic. I really liked it.
Really did. It had some great actors in it. Had the
it comes 5 years after or something like that, after the first Godzilla movie.
The first Godzilla
but they ignore
movie.
Everything else,
which was kind of a smart move. And it does this thing where it's going back in time to the start of what became Monarch and the discovery of Godzilla when they first tried to nuke him and turned him into something even bigger. And the clever thing was they used Kurt Russell and his son.
Yeah.
So his son was playing himself, playing his father as a young man, which was really kind of a clever idea, and it really worked.
It did. And here's the funny thing. Usually when you have a show that jumps far back and then forward again, I usually don't enjoy those too much because usually the pre-stuff is a lot more boring. I found the opposite to be true. I found the characterizations and the discovery of monsters and that three-person team working together. That was more interesting. I don't know. Yeah, I would say that's more interesting than the current timeline stuff.
Well, yeah, this, but I think that underlines the problem with the Western Godzilla universe is that, you know, they've put all this intrigue around this organization Monarch, even in the show it's bizarre because they're meant to be the people who know all about the Titans, and yet it's clear they know nothing about the Titans or very little, and what they do know they don't really understand, and secondly they're meant to be the organization that's going to deal with them, and yet they don't deal with them, they don't do anything, so they're kind of, it's, are they good, are they bad, and people change allegiances and sides a lot, and it's all very, very confusing. And frankly, I think it's a bit incomprehensible. And this is the problem they've had in the movies, is that, you know, you don't really understand kind of what's going on, but why everything is going on the way it is. And you know, they've just released a new Godzilla and Kong one.
It's already out on video, by the way.
Yeah. it's like they, you know, sometimes I think with movie releases, it's like trying to skip a stone.
Well, the problem, I'll be honest with you, I don't know how good the movie is, but when the poster is Godzilla, who's not known for, you know, fast movement, and King Kong are running at the camera, that is just stupid.
Stupid, yeah.
Just don't, you're like, really?
And the reviews I read were, it's okay, and I think that's the problem, is these things are meant to be big tentpole movies, and they're okay. And yeah, to go back to my analogy, I think sometimes a movie release is like skipping a stone. Some stones skip a long way. Those are movies that really last and make an impact, and some just hit the water and sink, and Godzilla, X-Kong, because they're a team now, for some reason.
For reasons, yeah.
Yeah, has sunk, and yeah, that exactly. That's the sort of thing I'm going to wait till it comes on streaming, and I'll watch it there. And you know, but the difference between that and what they did with Godzilla Minus One, which now, is almost like a reboot.
That's a Japanese movie, isn't it?
Yeah, this is done by the original inventors of Godzilla.
And here's the thing: Godzilla was never supposed to be some kind of an anti-hero, or he's a protector. I know they went that even with the original studio way back in the day, but the original concept of Godzilla was based on the Japanese fear of, nuclear weapons and what they can do and their long-lasting effects. Because you got to remember, the first one came out not very long after the United States dropped two atomic bombs.
Yeah.
And so this was playing right into the Japanese fear at the time. And it was...
Yeah, and he's meant to be like a force of nature.
Yes.
You know, the fact that you can't really stop a force of nature... You just have to endure it, and yes, it was a metaphor for the atomic weapon drops.
Yes,
what it did was it basically turned, because, you know, there's a bit of revisionism there. There was a reason that the U.S. dropped atomic bombs on Japan. It wasn't just because they felt like it. They were at war, a very bloody, what looked like to. Was going to be a never-ending war, because it didn't look like the Japanese were ever going to give up, and so they used these terrible weapons and brought them to their knees, literally.
Yep.
Godzilla is a way of using that as a metaphor without bringing in the whole, well, maybe it was our fault type thing, which is interesting because Godzilla Minus One takes a slightly different approach, because there's a very strong sense of in Minus One, of the military don't know what they're doing and they don't know how to deal with these things properly, and in fact it's the people who have a better idea about how to deal with these things.
So I thought Godzilla, and I posted this on Facebook, Godzilla Minus One, and I've seen, I think, every Godzilla movie. I was obsessed with those movies growing up in the 80s, because by then they weren't making any new ones and they were on repeat. For us, it was always the station out of Chicago that you would get real clear on the weekends, which I always found amusing. But like every Saturday morning or every Sunday morning, they would have a Godzilla movie. So I got to, and it was on, you know, there's what, maybe eight of them back then, if that many. I don't even remember now. But they would just repeat the same movies over and over. And usually it was a two movie block. You'd see two Godzilla movies. And I was obsessed with them. I loved it. The sound of Godzilla when he would, you know, do that roar.
Yeah.
I loved it. Loved it. And yes, it was cheesy and it was a guy in a costume and I knew that, but it was, I completely bought into it. The tanks look fake as hell. Okay, I get it. The buildings were paper mache when he's crashing it. I get it. Yeah, but it didn't matter.
Suspension it was, of disbelief.
Yes, it absolutely was. Yeah,
you know.
You just bought into it.
Yeah.
And I haven't in any Godzilla movie. That one they did in like 2000 with Matthew Broderick, there was parts of that I like, but that wasn't Godzilla. It didn't look like Godzilla. It was kind of dumb.
They took a very different... They basically said Godzilla was a big dumb animal.
Yes.
And they kind of took that approach to it.
Which doesn't work for the character.
Not really, no. Because there's no... Again, there's no...
Mystique.
Motivation behind what's happening.
Or a mystique behind the character.
Yeah, exactly. Godzilla just shows up and does stuff. And if you kind of go, well, it's just an animal, a big animal, then, you know, it's just like, that whole movie was...
Bad.
There were parts of it that were okay, but all in all, it was unsatisfying.
Yes. So we get to, you know, the monster universe, and they're hit or miss, and you can take them or leave them. But Godzilla Minus One is a different beast. And I have to say, the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen.
Oh, absolutely.
It was so good. And remember, you don't see Godzilla a whole lot in this movie.
No, in fact, you see Godzilla near the beginning and then for a whole hour. No Godzilla. It's all character stuff. In a foreign language. But not only that, the character stuff is really, really good.
Really good. Just,
you buy into this. These are people who find each other in kind of ruined Tokyo after the war. And circumstances means this group ends up together, and then you spend an hour just watching them trying to recover from what they've been through in the war.
Yeah,
and obviously, you know, the lead character, the guy, you know, he's got these very complex feelings of survivor guilt.
It's more than that he was a coward in two different parts of the movie.
That's what I mean. He was meant to be a kamikaze pilot, and he bailed out and flew back to
the base. And by the way, anybody that hasn't watched it, we're going to spoil some stuff here.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to go... the thing is, it's in some respects, it's an unspoilable movie because the actual beats are the usual things you would expect in a monster movie. You know, monster discovered, stuff happens, monster attacks... a city, Tokyo in this case, more stuff happens, monster is dealt with in some way.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the three acts.
Yeah.
But as I said, they just hang it all on this incredible characterization and motivation, which means the story really works because you just buy into, you know, these people, the monster is the monster, but they, you understand why they do everything they do. And everything they do, you kind of get behind and are into.
Well, because they did character building, motivation. They did all the stuff that it seems like big screen movies have kind of forgotten to do.
Yeah.
I mean, some of them do. Like Captain America movies, the first two were... They actually spent the time and built these characters up. That's what you're supposed to do. Yeah. They do just a fantastic job. I don't speak Japanese. I can't understand Japanese. All I have is... the translation on the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
And I completely bought into every single character. I understood why, like when he goes and sends all those letters out and the guy finally shows up.
Yeah.
And the first thing he does is beat the shit out of him.
Yeah.
Completely understandable. Yeah. You understand why he does that. You know?
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. Yeah,
here's the thing. I mean, this is you might think, oh, this is just a small cast movie. I mean, that's another problem, which some of these big blockbusters, is they have a core group of four or five people, and the whole movie revolves around what they do. This has a really big cast. And not to be stereotypical about this, but one of the difficulties that we have with Asian people, and Asian people sometimes have with us, is that if you don't live in that culture, it can be quite difficult to tell some of these people apart, particularly in a movie. And yet you very quickly, because of the way they act and their characterizations, even though you can't really understand their voices, you quickly get who is who, who's related to who, who's, you know, who likes who doesn't like who, and all of this sort of thing. It's all done so well.
Yeah, all the characters have depth to them.
You can and not only that, you can understand... You may not understand what they're saying, but you can understand the emotions of the characters from the acting. even though you don't understand what they're saying. You're reading the subtitles. I mean, the acting is that good.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I don't know any of these actors. I don't know if I've seen them in anything else. I don't know if they've been in any English-speaking roles. I have no idea.
Yeah. The guy played the mad scientist.
Yeah, I think I've seen him. I've
seen him in something else.
I agree.
But I couldn't tell you what
it is. But I think that has more to do with his hairstyle in the movie.
Yeah, maybe.
It was kind of the Albert Einstein craziness thing going on.
You see, in a regular Hollywood Western movie, he would have some brilliant idea that would save the day.
Yeah.
He has a brilliant idea, and you kind of realize it would save the day, but they can't pull it off. And then something else happens. It's just so well done.
Yeah.
It really is. And, you know, this. I think we talked about this when I talked about the movie. This movie was made on a minuscule budget compared to a Hollywood movie, and it looks amazing. For the special effect, for the money they spent, the special effects, and it really just goes to show that it's not necessary to spend $150 million bringing these things to the screen. And actually, you could spend a lot less money and they can be better. Because this is, as you say, the best Godzilla movie you will ever see.
It so far. You know? I mean, I don't want to rule out that they can make a better one.
I look forward to the same studio kind of building off
that's,
this.
That's what I was going to say. I would rather they end this monster universe stuff. And if you're going to have a monster movie, focus on King Kong. Because I think that first King Kong movie with Jack Black and all those guys, Samuel L. Jackson, that was a good movie. And you buy this giant ape and you get its intelligence and, you know, you kind of understand why he's a little bit infatuated with the girl, because that's always a King Kong thing. But focus on that, because that's what you're good at. You're not good at the giant lizard. You don't understand his motivation. You don't understand the character. It just doesn't work. Whereas Minus One is just brilliant. They understand who Godzilla is. You kind of understand that this thing is not just a dumb monster. Yeah. It literally doesn't like the humans.
Yeah.
His first attack, when he's not nearly as big, was so well done.
Yeah.
It was scary. You're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So. Yep. If you haven't seen Godzilla Minus One, it's out on digital now. 100% worth getting.
Yeah.
I'll watch it again.
In fact, it's one of the few movies that if it were to be re-released in theaters, I'll probably go and watch it in theaters.
Wasn't it called Black and White when it first came out?
No, they did a Black and White one afterwards.
Yeah, okay.
They did a director's cut that was in Black and White.
Yeah, see, I saw the color one, and I kind of wish I would watch it in Black and White, because I think it would have been a little bit more authentic from what I remember of Godzilla movies, because they were all black and white back in the day. Well, not all of them. They finally came out in color, and it always looked bad.
So they were in 70s Technicolor, which was bad. The problem back then is they brought color in, and it made it really obvious that it was being filmed in the studio by a guy in a suit.
Yeah. Stick with your strength, I think, is the point there. Another movie I watched, and I don't know if you've seen it yet, is Dune Part 2.
I have not seen this one yet, but I did watch. I caught up on the first one because I'd not seen the first one.
So the first one I would give a strong C+, maybe even a B-.
Yeah.
But it's kind of uneven. They make it so they assume that you already know the story and you're just enjoying the new retelling of it. Except I've never read the Dune series. It was... Mm-hmm. I don't know. It just never really appealed to me. And then I saw the really bad, what was it, 80s movie or 90s movie? I think it was
80s. Yeah, it was the David Lynch.
Yeah, that was
David
bad.
David Lynch one. It was early, mid-80s, I think.
Yeah, it was so bad. It really was. And the CGI just killed it. So I watched the first movie, and I found it enjoyable. Enjoyable enough to give Part 2 a chance. Part 2 is freaking brilliant. I would give it an A-. It is so much better than Dune Part 1. Well, and I thought it was only going to be two movies, but no, there's going to be more.
Yeah, my understanding is that because of the way it ended up being structured, like Dune Part 2 is like a big third act for the first movie, which is really what the first movie was lacking, because it fell flat because the stuff at the beginning of the movie, the kind of the political intrigue, you obviously... you know, most people know what's coming. They're moving to this planet and they're being you know, set up to fail. So you kind of know, well, that's what's happening. But for some reason, the takeover, they kind of fall from grace, which they all know, even in the universe, they know is coming, kind of fell a bit flat. And then they ended up with this kind of weird third act in that movie that I just actually, it's meant to be setting up Paul as the, you know, as he...
The
as
Messiah.
Not even that. Well, that's being talked about, but it's setting up that him and the people are going to be accepted by these desert dwellers. And the way it's done was just a little bit odd, and things happen that you don't quite understand. And the idea, obviously, was to kind of leave you gasping for the sequel. But I felt it was, like you say, it was okay, but it wasn't mind-blowingly good.
Yeah.
If
you have an entire day, it's worth watching one and two together, because you will enjoy number one way better after you've seen number two. Because, and it's not special effects stuff. It's character building. It's the story itself and the progression. And it's the fish out of water story, which is always entertaining. It's...
fish out of water in this case.
It's so much better. It just is. And you understand where everyone's coming from now. Whereas in the first movie, it's just kind of all over the place. You're not even sure, okay, I don't understand why. Well, what is happening here?
I remember reading that when I read the books as well, I remember spending a lot of time thinking, these people know what's coming. They know they're being set up, and yet they just kind of walk into it.
Blissfully,
You're not even unaware. It's just like, yeah, we know we're going to get our bags get shafted, and we're probably all going to die. And they just go, oh, okay, well, sucks to be us.
That's the way it is. I'm just going to roll with it.
And you just kind of think, well, and obviously the whole point was a framing device. You need, you know, Frank Herbert wanted to get Paul into the desert of Arrakis so that he could turn him into a messiah. It just... didn't really, even in the book, it didn't really strike home. There was a lot of cool stuff in there.
Frank is great at world building.
Yeah. Well, that's it. The stuff you're really interested in, the stuff you want to know more about, there's so little of that in those early books. So you want to know, how does the Space Guild work? What does the spice allow the navigators to do? Why is it so important? You also want to know these Bene Gesserit women, who you just think, you know, why are they kind of sneaking around the shadows? These people are badass. They should be running the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're not. And, you know, they kind of, and you just think, because they're like superpowers.
Yeah.
You know, they can see into the future. They can.
Well, they're more witches than anything.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They can make people do things. They've got a special martial art that's apparently nobody else can do, and all of these things. And it's interesting because all of the technology in Dune always has everything they do has a fatal flaw, which kind of makes it pointless.
Yeah.
So they have energy shields, but energy shields can't stop kinetic objects, particularly slow kinetic objects, right? At which point you kind of think, well, if that's the case, why bother with the energy shield at all,
right?
You know. Yeah, because what happens is everyone fights, and then as soon as they get close to each other, they very slowly stick a knife through the shield.
Yeah, which is dumb.
which is just like, well, why bother with that then?
So
why not have armor on under the shield?
Yeah, you
know, we have stab vests now.
Yeah, exactly.
But no, they just sit there and let somebody knife. There's a lot of weird things in Dune, and you know, the big stuff is amazing. The ecosystem, like you say, the world that he created, the idea of the sandworms.
Well, they take the new one and make it small, if that makes sense. They really do focus on Atreides and his journey to become who he's going to be. There's a lot of action, don't get me wrong, but it's action based on the character development. And they didn't do enough character development in the first one to make it a great movie, just an okay movie.
Yeah.
Part two is so much better. Do I want a part three? If they can match part two's,
This is the weird thing, because a while back I went and reread Dune the novel, and I got to the end of it, and I thought, huh, what happened to the rest of it? Because I remember a lot more, and then I realised I must have read two or three of the following novels, where kind of after he becomes the Messiah, more interesting things happen.
Yes,
you know, and he ends up. you know, kind of taking everything over. And I'd read all of that, and I'd forgotten I'd read it. I thought it was all in the first book, and it wasn't.
No.
So if they develop that, you know, the stuff where he then uses his position as running Dune to actually then take over the Empire and all of that, there's a lot of very interesting stuff that happens then.
Well, they left it on a cliffhanger, yeah, which is always kind of sucky, but it, by the time it ends, you're like, okay, I am ready for this to be over. I don't want another hour of this. I only have so much time, if you will.
Only so much bladder capacity.
But, you know, I almost never watch a movie all the way through now. I just don't have the time. So I'll watch, mm-hmm, like 45 minutes of it and another 45 minutes of it. And with Dune Part 2, that was like 4 days worth of, you know,
yeah,
watching snippets of it. That even happens with TV shows if it's an hour long. Sometimes I only get, yep, to watch a half hour, and then I'll come back to it later when I have more time. But
yep,
with Dune Part 2, I got to say. So here you go. Two movies so far that I've given you guys that's really worth watching. Dune Part 2 and Godzilla Minus 1. Honestly, with, yep, Dune Part 2, you almost don't need to watch the first one, which is saying, no, something.
Yeah, yeah.
You completely, they get you caught up really quick. You're, it's like, okay, like I get it.
It's a bit like Empire. You don't really need to have seen Star Wars to watch Empire Strikes Back.
No, you don't need to, but no, it does help make why Darth Vader is so obsessed with the Rebel Alliance and this Luke Skywalker guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, they blew up the Death Star.
Yeah. Yeah, but they tell you they blew up the Death Star in the opening crawl.
True. But you do have to see the progression of Luke. That is important, especially when it comes to, you know, the last of the Return of the Jedi.
I'm talking about Empire, yeah, not Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
I would say you need to have seen Star Wars to watch Return of the Jedi. I'm saying you don't need to have seen Star Wars to watch Empire. So I can imagine people came to Empire, watched it, and then went back and watched Star Wars.
Well, I have always said the correct way to watch the Star Wars movies, and we're ignoring 7, 8, 9 because they don't exist, is you watch New Hope, which, by the way, wasn't called a New Hope back in the day. It was just Star Wars. No,
it wasn't. It was just Star Wars.
Yeah. New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, because then you get to the I Am Your Father, and you're like, is he, yeah, really? Holy shit. And then watch episode, I hate to say it, 1, 2, and 3, and then watch Return of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. If you do it in that order, it's a way better movie. Because if you watch 1, 2, 3, you know, by the time I Am Your Father and Luke doesn't believe him, well, you already know that, yeah, that is his father. You've, yeah, known that since episode, you know, Star Wars, the original one. You know that Obi-Wan is not really telling the truth in that movie. It's way better if you watch it is 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6. That is, yeah, the proper order to watch Star Wars.
And I haven't read it yet. It's in my reading list, but I did read, I did save an article the other day that basically tries to redeem The Phantom Menace and say it's not as bad as you think it was, and it's worth watching. And I think there's something to that as well. I remember watching Phantom Menace and actually quite enjoying it.
I like it more now than I did when it first came out.
Yeah, there were large chunks of it where you just kind of, there's an awful lot of eye rolling going on. But I thought it was cool to see, you know, the Jedi at the height of their powers as the space police and the space navigators, the space ambassadors. And, you know, I found Liam Neeson's performance of Qui-Gon really good. I thought, you know, this is a guy who's got shit together, and he kind of exudes that on every scene. Nothing that happens really ever phases him in this movie, even when he gets stabbed through the chest with a lightsaber.
Yeah, he's a badass.
He is. And you know, he really just exudes, even though, you know, he's not necessarily on the same page as the rest of the Jedi Council, he really does exude this supreme confidence in that, you know, everything's going to be all right, and we can deal with anything, and nothing phases us. I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, and too many people back in the day focused on how bad Jar Jar was, but
yeah,
the people that did that, including us, let's be honest, tended to forget that it was made for kids.
Yeah,
but the problem with making a kids movie like that is knowing that actually the fan base are not kids anymore.
Yeah.
They're in their 30s now. And you have, yeah, to take that in consideration. And I don't think Lucas really did.
No, I think he was very much starry-eyed, driven by, you know, merchandising opportunities.
Yes, he was just going to make money. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he wanted to. I suspect, much like our nemesis on this show, Zack Snyder, that a lot of what you saw in Phantom Menace, you would have seen in the original Star Wars if he'd had the budget.
Yes, I agree. If he didn't have people telling him no. Because you did get to that when it came to Return of the Jedi. There was some stuff in there that should not have been in there. And it's because they let his ego, at that point, they're like, oh, he's going to make us all this money, and this is the last one, and he's going to go all in. We just get out of his way now. They didn't do that with Return of the Jedi, or with Empire Strikes Back, or the first Star Wars.
Yeah, and, you could argue that some of the Ewok stuff in Return of the Jedi was a foreshadowing of Jar Jar. That is part of what he thinks people like, and he's never got the memo that they don't like it.
Yeah, I know.
Though a lot of people don't like
it. I think he did get the memo. He just doesn't care. He just thinks everyone's wrong.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the last subject here before we move on to our bracket, and that is a show that we've kind of shit on for a long time, and that's Star Trek Discovery.
Well, it's one of those shows that I'm glad it exists, because it's led to a lot of much better stuff. And actually, it's one of those shows that season by season has generally gotten better and better and better. And I think season 5, I'm enjoying it the best of all of them. In fact, I'm enjoying it so much, I'm kind of annoyed it's the last season now.
Well, I was going to say that, because I haven't enjoyed... I liked the first season okay. The second season I thought was a little bit better, but the third and fourth seasons I was just like, ugh, it's just too much emoting all the time.
There is still a lot of that.
There is. But season 5, I'll be honest with you, so far I'm one episode behind. I'll get caught up by, it's the best season so far.
It's a classic season.
It feels like Star Trek now.
Yeah. And it's a for a start, congratulations to go back and taking some obscure episode from the TNG and hanging an entire season on this.
That episode of Next Generation always bothered me. The progenitors, is that what they call them? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah,
they're the ones that created life in the entire universe. That always kind of bothered me. I'm like, but it kind of made sense as why everybody is basically humanoid looking, right?
Yeah, and it was a retcon, because they were trying to explain the fact, because obviously the reason most people are humanoid in Star Trek is because it's much cheaper to take a guy and stick some prosthetics on its head than it is to, well, certainly back in the TNG days, they couldn't really do CGI animation for aliens. And
well, even brand new, they're all humanoid.
It's expensive. It's far more expensive than... it's so expensive, it's very difficult to do on an ongoing basis. And you can tell when it happens, because you get those... Voyager had quite a few CGI aliens, and you could tell they were CGI aliens because they had that kind of... Fake sheen to them, yeah.
Yeah,
and like that's what happens when you've got... Species
187 or whatever.
4782, thank you very much.
4-7, yeah, there you go.
They did kind of look strange, because they were done on the cheap, because they didn't have the time or the money to do them properly.
But I here's what is getting me about this new season. I don't know how this is going to end. Where all the other ones, I knew how it was going to end. All of them.
Yeah.
But this one, I don't know.
Exactly. And you taking that original concept and basically going on a season-long treasure hunt.
Yeah.
Where every week they have to find the treasure, but also... deal with whatever the treasure is sat in, has been really, really enjoyable. And I like the bad guys they've created. They've created them, but they're still sympathetic, and you understand their motivations, and you understand how desperate they are, which is what makes them dangerous. I really, really like we were talking before about fish out of water, the fish out of water of taking somebody who's used to be a captain and getting his own way, and he's kind of screwed things up, and now he's the first officer on Discovery, and this is Burnham's opportunity to try and give somebody else
That guy is really good in science fiction. Remember, he was on Battlestar Galactica, and he was my favorite part of that show. Yeah.
He's a terrific actor, and he is knocking it out of the park.
He is, and I don't see him in anything else. I don't. Where is this guy? He's a great actor. He really is.
Yeah.
He could come across as sympathetic and. and understanding. Yeah.
The
and
only the thing I don't like
he's
about
he's arrogant yeah. and an asshole.
Yeah. The only thing I don't like about him is his ears. I think they should not done the ears. They
yeah,
didn't need
I agree.
To make him an alien.
No, I agree.
You know, or they could have done face makeup or something like that. There was no need to, because I look at the guy and I think, you poor bastard, you must have to sit for hours in makeup every day to have those ears.
Yeah, they could have just made him a Betazoid
so
or something.
Yeah. And it's so unnecessary to the, they've tried to, you know, there was that whole episode where she communicated with him by showing she understood his culture.
Yeah.
Which was kind of clever, but again, you could have done it without the ears.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's knocking it out of the park. It's a great show. They found a use for Discovery in the 31st century, because it's the only ship that has the teleport drive that allows
spore
it to,
drive.
The spore drive that allows it to jump from place to place. So it becomes like a Pathfinder ship,
yep.
Which is kind of a cool idea. You know, so the fact that even this, you know, this starship that's 10,000 years old, whatever it's meant to be, it still has a place in the Starfleet of the future is kind of cool. Yeah, all of it's working really well. And as I say, I kind of wish we could have had more of this in earlier seasons, because it's one of those ones where, you know, by the end of the season, they're kind of building up to it. This is going to be, you know, universe affecting outcomes, which yes. is, you know, one of Star Trek's, one of Discovery's particular tropes, which has really become a bit tiresome because, yeah, you as you say, by the about third and fourth season, you just kind of think, wow, the whole future of the universe depends on this group of people again. It's becoming a bit unlikely.
Yeah.
Which is weird to say for a Star Trek show. One of the things I like about Strange New Worlds is it's not like that.
No.
It's literally just mission a week. They've got things to do. And yeah, there's overarching stories and everything like that. But it's not that level of pressure all the time. You know, maybe that's why the people in Discovery spend so much time talking about their feelings. Because, you know, they're just depressed by the fact that every year they have to save the entire universe.
It would be a little much after a while, I would imagine.
It'd certainly give you a bit of performance anxiety, if nothing else. You know, so some of it, even I think they are the art they're on with Hugh. He even says it at this point. He says, I'm a bit bewildered. I died. I came back to life.
Yeah.
Now I've had somebody else's consciousness control my body. You know, and he's going, what the hell?
Yeah, and, it's starting to affect me a little bit here.
Yeah.
So, but it's been good. I would give it a 7 out of 10,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah, definitely.
And none of the other ones, including my up till now favorite, was the first season. Second season. Yeah, I don't know. And nothing would have gone over 5 for me on this.
Yeah.
But what this does for me, and it's kind of the opposite of what you had said just a couple episodes ago, it makes me more... I'm glad they're ending the series. I am. Because I've had enough with them. They're going to go out in a bang. Great.
Yeah.
I'm done with this crew. But it does make me feel like the people in charge of it, not just this show, but as a whole,
yeah,
finally understand what good Star Trek is. The last season of Picard, brilliant. And it potentially could set up a whole nother series, which would be fine. I'd be happy with that. We already know Strange New Worlds is the best Star Trek that we've had in decades. It just is.
I would kind of say it's almost the best Star Trek we've ever had.
I recently, within the last few years, watched Voyager all the way through. And it was good, but there was some parts that just weren't. And it was way hit and miss. Next Generation was my favorite until Deep Space Nine. But Deep Space Nine, I started to try to rewatch it. Man, I couldn't get past the fourth episode of the first season.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't. Well, particularly the early seasons don't hold up well at all.
It does not, no.
And I think part of the problem with those older things, they had to do 24, 26 episodes a season.
Yes.
It was no wonder they got filler.
Yes.
Yeah? The advantage we have now is they do these shorter 10-episode seasons, which means that they can really craft
They get to the point. No filler.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think for me, and maybe this is nostalgia talking, but what I love about Strange New Worlds is it's the classic Trek on the classic ship with a lot of the classic characters. Yeah, and yet it's modern and really good.
It is, and I don't even care about Kurt taking over eventually because I love Pike. I think he's doing great. I love that character. That actor is just killing it. And it's been, what, two seasons now, or is it three? It's two.
We're waiting for the third season. Yeah.
So I've got all the confidence in the world in that. I understand a lot of people, including me, are upset that Lower Decks is going away. Because, again, we just talked about this. The crossover episode is just brilliant. But I'm confident that they know what's working now, what to do. And they're going to just continue to moving forward with some really good stuff. I am confident in it now.
I actually have mused on the ending of Lower Decks. And one thing that actually did occur to me is that part of what makes it work is it's so self-referential back to the Next Generation. And you can only mine that for so long.
Exactly.
Especially for a show that's quite old now and a lot of people have never seen.
Yes.
So actually, given that, that probably makes it's probably one of the motivations that they also want to go out on a high rather than keep mining.
And I'm glad because of that. Cave. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because that's just going to get old after a while. It's like, all right.
Well, what do you do then? Because they can't really refer to Voyager because all of that stuff happened, away Delta from Quadrant. The Federation. Yeah, right. The Delta Quadrant. So, where else do you go with it? You can't. And
exactly.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, let's get on to season 2, episode whatever, 4 of our bracket. So we're at a tricky point. We're down to 4 movies. And we've got to figure out which 2 are going to move it to the championship round, which will be on our next episode. And I think we already kind of know. But let's start at the top. The first one is the 2012 film The Avengers. Against Superman 2. This is not a completely knock it out of the park one because initially I look at that and I go, well, Avengers, of course, because that was such an iconic movie. To see those characters on screen took so many decades of advanced technology to make it believable. But it's more than that. The story was great. The directing was great. There isn't a weak part of that movie. There isn't one part of the movie that I feel like I could skip over. You know, when Captain America is talking to Dr. Banner on the helicarrier, I love it. It's brilliant. Yeah. I actually saw an outtake that they deleted, and it leads up to Captain America punching the punching bag when Nick Fury comes up and says he's got a mission for him.
Yeah.
It shows him kind of adjusting to life now. And I found it really good, but it wasn't necessary in the movie and they cut it. And I'm like, I'm glad I got to see the deleted scenes, but it would have weakened the movie a little bit.
Yeah. And to be fair, they then covered that in, was it the Winter Soldier?
I think, yes.
Where he gets to meet Sam for the first time. And it's all to do with him trying to get more integrated into modern society.
Well, the meeting of Sam was done so well. You understand why these two guys bond pretty quick. And a little bit of hero worship on Sam's part, because this is Steve Rogers, this is Captain America. But yet they humanize all the characters really well. But in The Avengers, you don't have a lot of time to give a character arc to every single one of these characters. And yet he did it somehow. You completely understand why Thor's there. He's there to get Loki, right? You completely understand Iron Man. You completely understand Captain America. A little bit less with Natasha, but with her going to recruit the Hulk and his slapping the table and said, you know, you could see the fear in her eyes because this is the Hulk, you know. Yeah. It's so well done. Hawkeye getting taken by Loki and completely well. Where, and then now you know his motivation when they finally, he gets knocked in the head. You know, you understand why he wants to go after Loki. And the big battle at the end is just so well done.
I agree. I mean, it's almost the perfect third act, which is, for Marvel movies, is quite an achievement, to be honest. I think, and looking back at it, I think the only part of the movie that the Avengers that didn't work for me was the motivations of Fury in actually keeping the Tesseract around and doing research on it, which obviously kind of leads into the whole, it basically is a MacGuffin that sets up the entire movie.
Well, but it also sets up more than that. It sets up Winter Soldier, because yeah, they're building weapons from this technology.
Yeah, I just thought it came across as first of all, you'd think the thing would be better protected, and secondly,
it was pretty well protected, dude. A god came and took it, and then he barely got away.
Well, did he? I'm not sure. I remember at the time thinking, God, you know, you'd have thought with the Tesseract that they would. First of all, I guess my fundamental problem with it is I thought, you know, if Nick Fury's assembled a set of superheroes, yeah, then what does he need the Tesseract for?
He didn't assemble them at that point.
No, well,
they've had the Tesseract for many, many years.
He'd been assembling the Avengers. The Avengers project was talked about from the end of the first Iron Man movie, and I know they kind of fudged it by suggesting they'd been shelved by the elders or whatever, when you know the holographic leaders. But it just felt a little bit too on the nose that, oh, well, here's the piece they've had to put in play to make this whole movie happen. And I just felt it was that Fury would be cleverer than that, put it that way, maybe. But you move past that very quickly because it happens right at the beginning of the movie, and yep. The movie moves so fast, you by the end of it, you're kind of forgetting about all of that, you know.
It's almost a perfect superhero movie.
It is,
almost. And it's a team, which is so hard to do. And then you get to Superman 2. And we know now that Richard Donner filmed Superman 1 and 2 at the same time.
Yep.
Was it supposed to be one movie or two? That's always been a little murky to me. Regardless, Superman 2 is a better movie than Superman 1.
Yeah.
Much better villain.
Because, just as we've just said about the Avengers, Superman 1 had to introduce the character, and you've got to remember, back in the late 70s, people knew who Superman was, but you know, comic book culture was not as commonly understood as it is nowadays. And so an awful lot, I remember, you know, I mean, it was only sort of 8 or 9, I didn't really understand where Superman came from before. I didn't know his origin story until I saw that movie, you know. And there would have been a lot of people who saw that movie who'd probably never read a comic,
yep.
And so didn't really know where Superman came from.
Right.
And the fact that the first one, it deliberately spent so much time showing you where the character came from and who he is and why he does what he does, yeah, it was crucial for Superman 2, but Superman 2 had the luxury of not having to go through all that baggage.
Correct.
And that made it, and then the fact that they then went on a rip-roaring story, because who doesn't want to see Kryptonians fighting Kryptonians, you know, made it a better movie. As well, the other characters, like Lex Luthor in Superman 2, much more interesting than in the first Superman.
Yes.
Because in the first Superman, he's trying to use nuclear weapons to leverage a land deal, which is the most boring supervillain plot ever.
Yep.
Whereas in Superman 2, he's trying to, you know, he's trying to get allied with his own Kryptonians. And he's trying to understand all of Superman's secrets. He's much more Lex Luthor than he was in the first movie.
But I think the Avengers have a way more watchability, not just from a CGI standpoint, but for almost every reason. It's just a better movie.
Yeah, there are, well, we talk about, you know, whether it's, you said The Avengers is virtually a perfect movie. The problem with Superman 2 is it has some flab in it.
Yes.
And that may well be because of the way it was created, the fact that they brought in a stunt director to finish it off.
Yep.
They had the big falling out. But the problem is, the stuff around Niagara Falls and how Lois finds out he's Superman and all of that.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Kind of lame.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
the flying around backwards to make people forget thing was pretty stupid too.
I don't know. That was the first. No,
that
one.
Was the first one. Yeah.
Yeah, the second one. No, he makes Lois forget everything by just kissing her, which was a power I didn't know he had. So
yep, still doesn't.
Thought he might use that more.
Yeah. still
maybe
doesn't
if he'd maybe if he kissed Lex Luthor and made him forget about him, yeah. Superman, that would have boded well for him.
Yeah, it would have been a very progressive movie for the time. So we both agree Avengers move on.
Avengers, yes.
So who's Avengers going to go against? Well, I think it's pretty obvious. 2002 Spider-Man movie against 2008's Wanted. Now, we've already...
We love Wanted.
It's really good.
It's beaten two... Well, certainly one movie we really, really rated, which is Mystery Men.
Yep.
But Spider-Man, man. I mean, Spider-Man was like the re-renaissance of a superhero movie.
It reinvented in an actual costume. See, this is what a lot of people forget. Up until that movie, X-Men was kind of the thing, right? And they kind of took their cue from The Matrix. Everyone's wearing leather and, you know, they're cool looking. They didn't have flashy, bright costumes. Well, here's Spider-Man, Spider-Man. Yeah.
Yeah, they made jokes about, you know, what, like, Wolverine goes, what do you want me to wear? Yellow spandex.
Yeah. And everybody's watching went, yes, that is what we want.
And then we see Spider-Man in 2002, and he's wearing blue and red spandex with rubber webs on it.
Yeah. And it still works today.
It still works. I mean, it still holds up. It's a great superhero movie. It was one of the first movies that really could leverage good CGI to actually fill in. You know, obviously.
Well, the web swinging, for instance.
Yeah, you know they did a lot of that via CGI, but also you know that was one of the first movies where they used an awful lot of CGI to remove structure that actually enabled the stunts to happen.
Yes.
And you know, so it's weird because we're talking about a human spider, but it feels very grounded. For a superhero movie,
it does.
You know, and
you believe in. Look, you believe that he has these powers. You get to see him learning about them and practicing his web swinging and all that. But you also understand his motivations. That when Uncle Ben dies, how bad it affects him. Tobey Maguire in this movie was great. You get the what's the word I'm looking for? The vulnerability of Peter Parker. That when he puts on the mask. That vulnerability goes away.
Yeah, he really did a great job in this, which I find very interesting because by all accounts he's not a very nice person in real life. But if you read the book Molly's Game about the lady who used to run the Hollywood poker parties, he wasn't very nice in that and. She had no reason to throw him under the bus, but apparently, he can be a bit of a dick. Never mind, though, because he wasn't in Spider-Man.
He was a little bit in Spider-Man 3.
Well, yeah, probably channeling some real experience there. But much as I love Wanted, I think Wanted is a great comic book movie, and it was much better than it had any right to be.
Way better.
To be honest, yeah. But it's not.
Was there a Wanted 2? It seems like there was.
No.
No?
No. Which is probably a good thing.
Yeah.
I think, you know, sometimes something is so good on its own, you don't really need to revisit the well, and you actually, you know, it's a common thing. People say the sequel's always worse than the original. Not in all cases, but I think in Wanted's case, it would have been.
Well, I think it is the case with Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2. I think the one with Dr. Octopus is a better movie.
Yeah.
Way better, but that's not here. Spider-Man is 2002. It's going to win. It's going to go up against the Avengers, and that's a hard one.
Tough battle.
That is a really hard one because I like both of these movies for different reasons, but regardless, I think they're the pinnacle of superhero movies. It's because of these two movies that we are where we are.
Yep.
So, and they're 10 years apart, and I think you would think that, well, from a CGI standpoint, the Avengers is going to be, you know, better than Spider-Man, but it's really not.
It's not CGI, though. It's not about the CGI.
No, it's about storytelling.
The story.
So we're going to get to that on the next episode. We hope you guys enjoyed this one. We'd love to get feedback. Easy to do, theshow@geekspubpodcast.com. You can go and find us on Twitter and Facebook, but we do it under our sister show, Tech Fan, which we'll be back next week with, I believe. I do have one scheduling thing next month, middle of next month. I'm going to go to New York, and we're leaving at like 4 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. So unless I do it from the road and I'll be somewhere in Pennsylvania driving, it's not really feasible to do.
So why is that a problem?
Other people in the car make a noise and then road noise.
Why? Yeah, so?
Yeah, true.
What's your point, man?
Yeah,
people demand the content.
I know it.
Otherwise, yeah. All those big-time sponsors who pay us those hundreds of thousands of dollars a year will be disappointed in us.
They'll drop right off. So we'll see you guys next week on Tech Fan, and we're going to talk about the new iPad that just came out, what David just got himself, I think. Yeah, interesting. So we'll see you then.
Bye.